All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, joined by my co-host, Alan Sterk, as we continue our series of Falcons historian shootouts, which pit two contestants, today being Matt Chernoff of 680 The Fan versus Brad Rowland, the host of Locked on Hawks, to see who knows the most trivia about the Falcons 2011 season.
You are Locked on Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked on Podcast Network, your team every day.
Today's episode of Locked on Falcons is brought to you by rockauto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. So you guys know me, I'm Aaron Freeman, one of your hosts, been covering the Falcons for a very long time on Twitter at FalcFans, the host of the Locked on Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, right here on the Locked on Podcast Network, your team every day. Joined by my co-host, Alan Sterk, formerly a contributor of The Falcoholic. You know him on Twitter at Alan_Sterk, that's A-double-L-E-N underscore S-T-R-K. And we're back for the final matchup of the second round of our trivia tournament, aka the Falcons historian shootout, where we look back at 15 years of recent Falcons history and test contestants that are Atlanta Falcons adjacents to see who knows the most. Today's competition features Matt Chernoff. You hear him every day on the Chuck and Chernoff show on 680 The Fan on your rides home from work. He's going up against Brad Rowland, the host of the Locked on Hawks podcast. Matt and Brad will join us later in the episode to answer Alan and my own 2011 trivia questions, but first we want to wet your whistle by giving your takes, thoughts, and memories of the Falcons 2011 season. But before we get into that, Alan has a unique perspective on the 2011 season, particularly the final game of the 2011 season with the Falcons playoff loss to the New York Giants because he was in attendance. Alan, I will give you the floor so that you can share that very tough and difficult day in your life.
It was the only day I ever spent money to watch the Atlanta Falcons play live. I'll never forget watching the Sunday night game because there was a time in the around 2010 to, I would say, maybe about 2014 when every week 17, the final game of the regular season was the NFC East and mostly featured the Dallas Cowboys losing because they made that a yearly tradition. So I'll never forget when the Giants beat the Cowboys and that kind of put the Giants in the fourth seed and the Falcons were in the fifth seed thanks to they smashed the Bucs, and Matt Flynn had his career day beating the Lions, which elevated the Falcons to the five seed. And what do you know? Falcons-Giants, wild card weekend. I live in New York. The stars were aligning. One of my boys, who is now actually my best friend, even though he moved to Cali, but he was a diehard Giants fan, even though it is hard to be a diehard Giants fan. He's very jaded now, especially living in Los Angeles. But at the time, he definitely was a big-time Giants fan. I was like, we got to make this happen. Let's just go. And he was like, all right, we're doing it. And for some reason, I told him, just use StubHub. I was just like, it's 2012, start a new year, just use StubHub, Ticketmaster, whatever. Tickets should have been like maybe $210. He used some other website, something I never even heard of. He's like, all right, I got tickets. I was like, use StubHub? He goes, no. How much were they? 270. I'm like, you're really testing me. I'm 18 years old. My parents don't necessarily give me a lot of money. I'm working at a library. I'm a freshman in college. Like, all right, we're doing it, I guess. Come on, Falcons. It has been a pretty season, but it's making some playoffs. Let's do this. So we go there. I'll never forget, like, 11:30, getting an active report and seeing Brent Grimes inactive. So I was just thinking in my mind, you're telling me Dominic Franks and Chris Rowland's going to be covering Mario Manningham and Akeem Nix and Victor Cruz. And Dante Robinson was coming up a pretty bad year. So I was like, oh, boy, I do not have high expectations going into this one. And what do you know? The Falcons defense put up a respectable performance. It was the offense which completely faltered, and it was kind of a fitting end to the Mike Mularkey's era because that season we saw things were just not really coalescing well. Like you could just see it was kind of like they were trying to shift to a pass-first offense, but Mike Mularkey kind of, I don't know, just that game, you just saw they couldn't really open things up. Granted, the offense line got completely manhandled, but I'll just never forget being in the stands, those fourth and shorts, I was just like, multiple times, Michael Turner did not get the ball, and it was just mind-boggling. And I don't even think Owen Mahaley was – oh, I think he was actually injured because this was the season where Mike Cox emerged, of all people, who was not very good. But it was just that game. Just being a stand, I think I saw six Falcon fans all together. I was wearing my double XL Roddy White jersey. Roddy White, I think most notably got to fight with Corey Webster in that game, which I know, Aaron, you were very angry about. So I think you turned on Roddy after the season. So what can I say? It was just an overall miserable experience. I didn't even celebrate when the safety happened. I just kept thinking this offense has to start putting up points quick because there's no way this Falcons secondary is going to last against the Giants' sure receivers. And what do you know? They definitely had their breakdowns. It took about two quarters, but it happened. So, yeah, very miserable experience. The only time I ever paid money to watch the Falcons, this is before I got my credentials as a media member. But, oh, man, I still get a lot of slack to this day. But then again, 28-3 happened, what, 6 years later? So, well, 5 years later, I should say. So Giant fans now have multiple things to give me ammunition on. Oh, unlike Matt Ryan, he was no Eli. Eli beat Tom Brady twice. You know, all that great trash talk you love to hear, even though Eli Manning is a very mediocre quarterback at best.
So obviously we got today's episode off to a very thrilling start. And just to correct the record, I didn't turn on Roddy White. I was just mad at Roddy. Like, you got shut down. Like, don't pick fights just because you're frustrated and angry. But, you know, that's the part of Roddy that I know a lot of fans appreciate, that passion. That
you were very critical of Roddy.
I was very critical of him in that game because he got shut down by Corey Webster. And, like, come on, man. But, most of my criticism, Roddy was coming off a pretty bad year as well.
He had 100 receptions, yet it was very underwhelming.
He hit like 20 drops or whatever he had. Just like a lot of drops.
Oh, we'll get into it.
Yeah.
We'll get into it.
But like, we'll talk more about the 2011 season coming up. But, you know, my takeaway, we'll move past the playoff game because no one wants to revisit that. But I remember that morning finding out Brent Grimes was going to be inactive, that it was going to be a problem. And that game, more so than my anger at Roddy White, was more of really the first time for me of sort of understanding the limitations of play calling and how it can hold back your offense, because the Falcons basically knew that the Giants' pass rush was going to be too much for them. So their game plan was, we're just going to pound it down their throat. And I think because of the big game that Michael Turner had in the Week 17 matchup, they gave him a lot of confidence going into that game that they could do that, even though their running game basically was non-existent after the bye week outside of that one game. And the problem with their game plan with that was they didn't have a plan B. So when that didn't work, they didn't really have any sort of way to attack that Giants secondary and find ways to generate offense, which contributed to why Roddy White had a bad game, which contributed to why Matt Ryan had a bad game. Because I remember basically spending the next 3 months on the FileFans.com forums defending Matt Ryan and blaming his poor performance not on something that is inherently wrong with his inability to win big games, as so many fans like to believe at that time, but more just like, this is the difference between having a very limited offense and having a good offense, because particularly that season with the Patriots, that was really like the first time where I started talking about, like, this is, you know, for anybody who's been a regular listener to this podcast for the last, you know, couple of years, all they hear me talk about is route combinations. And that was really like the beginning of that, where watching the Patriots offense and then watching the Falcons offense and seeing how the Patriots, you know, run these different route combinations that help, you know, lesser players and even better players get open, and the Falcons don't really do that. And so it would basically take another 5 years before we saw that type of offense here in Atlanta. But, we did an episode where we praised Mike Mularkey earlier this week about how good he was in 08. And now we're finishing out the week by, you know, condemning him and saying good riddance by the time he left in 2011.
Like, that's second, fourth and short, the pre-snap formation, it was empty set and they had Julio. Like, they're going to fake or reverse me, but end up just being QB sneak. Like, the fact that Michael Turner wasn't even on the field, like, Deion Sanders said it best. He's like, this man has thighs bigger than Earl Campbell. How do you not give him the ball? Oh, no, I botched it. He has thighs bigger than Eric Dickerson. And I was cracking up. I was like, good. And you just see Michael Turner on the sideline just looking like, how am I not even on the field in this situation? And I think that just epitomized everything. And the offense line did have some liabilities. Will Smietek was a journeyman. Joe Hawley had no business being right guard, but Garrett Reynolds was a flop, and they ironically experimented with Sam Baker at right guard, which, oh boy, that did not go well. So Joe Hawley was like that last hope, but that completely faltered, and yeah, they just got punked in that game. That was the real beating. And I know Giants wanted to win the Super Bowl, but I think Mike Smith realized they need a complete turnover. The coaching staff, Van Corder had to go, and I'll see Mularkey. Yeah, that game, it kind of encapsulated how underwhelming that season was, because 2011, there weren't many shining moments. It was just a team that beat up on a lot of bad competition and just kind of got by on having a really good roster.
Yeah, they had a couple of decent wins in there, but mostly it was beating up a bunch of bad teams. And we will sort of get more into which of those teams and some other highlights and lowlights from the 2011 season coming up on today's episode. But we know there was a lot of missing parts of that Falcons offense in that 2011 playoff loss to the New York Giants. But if you're missing parts to your car or truck, then you should head to rockauto.com. They have everything you might want, including engine control modules, brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil. You can even get new carpet. You can get everything in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. Rockauto.com has a catalog that's easy to use and navigate, and you can quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose by brand, specifications, and prices that you prefer. And on the note of those prices, Rock Auto's prices are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Go to rockauto.com right now and see the parts available for your car, truck. Write "Locked On" in the "How Did You Hear About Us" box so that they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. So we are talking about the Falcons 2011 season. Alan, is it fair to say of the team's playoff seasons that we've talked about on these Falcons historian shootouts over the last couple of weeks, this is probably the most meh one?
By far, because when you break it down, 2008 obviously was memorable. Team surpassed all expectations and it was just exciting. 2010 being the number one seed, winning 13 games, being a lot of good teams. And 2017, for as much as it was frustrating, they still had a couple of signature wins. You look at the Thursday night win against New Orleans, you look at the Monday night win against Seattle, obviously they won a playoff game. Like, and there was at one point where like, oh wow, they actually might be a Super Bowl team. So I don't think when you look at the 2011 season, this team ever really resembles a Super Bowl team. I didn't think there was, well, obviously going into season, there were a lot of high expectations, but there was never really a time you were doing the breakdown, you're looking at the Packers, the Saints. I'm trying to remember what's the other high seed. It was a what?
The 49ers were the two seed.
Yeah. Oh, that was the Al Smith, Vernon Davis when they beat. You know, so yeah, you had the 49ers. Like, you look at that landscape of the NFC, and the Lions were also really good here. NFC East was garbage. Giants slid in. I know they won Super Bowl. But I just remember looking at the contenders, and as the season progressed, I was like, the Falcons, like, they might make the playoffs, but is anyone thinking that could really make a run? Like, okay, they have talent, but it just nothing ever really aligned for them. And it seemed like whenever there was a real big game, whether it was against the Saints or the Packers or even the Texans, I remember that Houston game, even though Schaub was injured, TJ's coming back, whenever it was a big test, they just fell short every single time, outside of maybe that Lions game when they were 5-1, and it was pretty good points. But it was just pretty underwhelming. Like, there were a couple signature performances here and there, but this was not a season I look back to fondly of.
Yeah, I mean, you know, looking back through the highlights, because I don't really have a lot of distinct memories of this 2011 season. Like, I remember things that happened in the season, like, oh, it's Julio's rookie season. Oh, this was the year where Sam Baker got hurt and Will Svitek stepped in and was actually better than Sam Baker. You know, things like that happened. But, like, going back and watching the highlights and seeing sort of they got off to, what, like a 2-3 record to start the season. But they were a couple of plays in those two wins against, the Eagles and who was the other team?
Seattle,
yeah.
Missed a 61-yard kick.
Yeah,
Josh Jackson.
They were a couple of plays away from losing those games, and they could have easily started 0-5. And so, like, what at least in my mind, and I don't – obviously, we don't know – you know, obviously, I didn't think of this at the time, but sort of revisiting, it's kind of reminiscent of, you know, that little bit of a hangover that we saw, you know, when the team had a lot of success – the previous year in 2010 being the one seed, having the best record in football. And we saw this kind of repeat itself after the 2012 season going into 2013 season. Fortunately, the 2011 season was able to sort of right the ship. But, like, they just kind of seemed like they had a little bit of a hangover to start the season. Then they, you know, they beat up on Cam Newton in Carolina. Then they got, you're right, probably their biggest signature win against a quality opponent was a Detroit Lions team, which, you know, most of the time when we talk about the Falcons beating up on the Lions during these historian shootouts, it's been a bad Lions team. But that Lions team, I think, was like 5-1 at the time, obviously wound up, you know, making the playoffs, finishing 10-6 that year. Then they beat up on the Colts. They had another win against a struggling Titans team at that point in the season. They had started off pretty solid, but, you know, it seemed like Hasselbeck had hit a wall and Jake Locker was about to take over. Minnesota was particularly bad that year with Christian Ponder.
Pearson was injured that game too.
Yeah. So, you know, and then we know Jacksonville with Blaine Gabbert and those guys. So it was one of those things where, yeah, you know, it's just a team that was like good enough, basically. And it's not to say that everything that happened this year was bad, but it was just like there's just nothing that really sort of stands out about the season. You know, it was like Roddy's worst year. He dropped the ball a bunch. We already talked about that. But, you know, Julio, there were times where Julio was a big part of the offense, particularly late in the season, I thought. But then, you know, he had a really big game against that Seattle team and then the Colts game. But, like, for the most part, it was just like a lot of like, oh, you know, Julio doing nothing for three quarters. And then he'd get a big play late in the game. You're like, oh, yeah, you know, there's Julio. And sometimes those were big, meaningful plays, like in that Carolina comeback. And other times it was just kind of like garbage time. Like I remember the week one game against the Bears, he had a couple of big catches in the fourth quarter when the game was pretty much over. You know, it just goes back to, you know, I'm not going to complain too much more about Mike Mularkey, but it just goes back to sort of the point of, like, they just didn't know how to integrate him into the offense quite yet.
I thought the second half of the year, Julio was really good, and Roddy. I thought they stepped up, and probably a big reason why. Like that Carolina game, if you remember, they were down, I believe, like 22-7. I mean, that was the case. Sam Baker's third right guard, he got benched because he was responsible for a safety. Like Matt Ryan just got smashed. But then Cam Newton made a couple of mistakes. There was one play, I think he like tried to sidearm it, and Babineau hit him, and it fell into Mike Pearson. By the way, I totally forgot Mike Pearson was still on the team, and he made some plays that year. Like Mike Pearson was still hanging on. I thought 2010 was his last year, but I was seeing him in 2011. He should have picked six against Houston, but of course, Dante Robinson, one of many times, got called for holding that season. And of course, it should have been his revenge game against Houston. He botched that. But I think if we could look at highlights from 2011, I would say this was actually Tony Gonzalez's best season in LA, because I thought 2010 he looked kind of not declined, but he looked a little older. Like he wasn't as explosive stuff. I just remember in 2011 he was getting yacked consistently. Like he had that infamous step over move where he just he kind of uses the defender's leverage and he goes the other way. Like he used the sideline as like his best friend, and like every time it would be a linebacker safety they were with. So I thought that was his best year. Harry Douglas was actually really good. There was a play against the Vikings. I forget if it was EJ or Aaron Henderson. It was one of the Hendersons. He literally stiff-armed the linebacker down and scored. Like, it was like Harry Douglas not only made an explosive play, but he actually ran through contact. So I thought Harry Douglas actually made it in a couple big plays. 2011 was his big year because there were times where Julio was injured, of course, so he needed to step up. So I think those two deserve credit. Jason Snelling had a couple of plays here and there. Of course, that Saints game, he took a check down. He broke six tackles. Like, literally, the whole Saints secondary tried tackling him, and they couldn't bring him down. And then he finished off by stiff-arming Malcolm Jenkins, which was probably, like, one of the few highlights from that Saints home loss. We got to mention, those Saints games were bad. Like, Falcons were kind of fortunate they were competitive for some, but, of course, that Monday night game where Sean Payton just had to stick it in with Drew Brees breaking the record, that was ugly. But if I could look at highlights, I thought yeah, there were a couple of nice bright spots with some of the weapons, would it be Gonzalez or Adolis. And I thought Abraham, even though he only had 9.5 sacks, I thought Abraham still had a really good year. Grimes was doing his thing, even though he was injured a bit. And we have to mention, of course, Sean Weatherspoon. Oh, man. This is when we thought, okay, Spoon might become a real difference maker. And I know it didn't quite come to fruition, but I think Spoon, because I know 2011, people look at it like, okay, they didn't really sell anywhere, but the defense was actually relatively solid. Mm-hmm. Like if you look back on the stats, like I think they were like top five in run defense, which I know that could be a bit of an inflated stat, but I thought the defense, all things considered, was pretty good. I think the big issue, if you remember the highlights, Aaron, was just they were not very good tackling. There was a bunch of missed tackles, if you recall.
Yeah. No, I remember that defense being pretty solid. And, you know, say what you will about Ray Edwards, he was a good run defender for the Falcons.
I know. They paid him like that, too.
Yeah, you know. Look, it was the first of many times where the Falcons paid a lot of money to someone to stop the run in free agency.
By the way, we bring up Ray Edwards. I got to quickly mention this. And thankfully, at the time, I just joined Twitter and no one knew who I was. So, thankfully, if it happened in 2019 or 2011, oh, man, I would be getting roasted. But I remember seeing them signed Ray Edwards, and the Vikings are my second team. I always love the Vikings, and just that D-line, Jared Allen, you know, Kevin, Pat Williams, and Ray Edwards. So I just loved everything about that D-line. I just remember watching Ray Edwards. This guy's a freak specimen. He's showing promise to the edge rusher. I'm like, oh, Falcons get him. this is the missing piece. I think they go to the Super Bowl. I think they'll go all the way. And when they signed Bray Edwards, I was thinking, all right, this team's going to the Super Bowl. Bray Edwards is going to elevate them, become a championship caliber team. That's all that needs to be said.
And there you go. And speaking of actually dominant defensive linemen, I remember this season distinctly because, like, Corey Peters had a couple of sacks that made that pick against Carolina and, you know, made some splash plays. But I remember this was, like, the first of, like, you know, I remember getting into fights with people like, oh, Corey Peters better than Jonathan Babineau. And I was like, you know, these are fighting words to me. And I just remember distinctly because when he had the game, like, I kept throwing it at people. Whereas that Tennessee game, he was dominant in that game. You know, no shade meant to Corey Peters, who turned into a very solid pro for the Falcons, particularly in 2014, and then still going strong in Arizona. But I just remember, like, you know, nobody else other than until we got Grady Jarrett these last couple of years had these sort of dominant performances where it was like they were unblockable in these games. And I think that's just one of those things that's very underappreciated about Jonathan Babineau, because he didn't get, you know, particularly in his 2011 season, he had one sack in the season. But it was just like people didn't understand how disruptive he was and how, you know, how important he was to sort of disrupting plays and freeing up guys like Sean Weatherspoon, among others. Even Curtis Lofton was halfway decent this year, although we knew, as we talked about previously, some of his limitations in the changing league in terms of coverage. But, you know, it was one of those things where I just got to give some love for my boy Jonathan Babineau.
That Vikings game on that fourth down, he was stuck covering Percy Harvin 40 yards downfield. Oh, not even Christian Ponder could even miss that. He just threw it up. He's like, all right, we're going to score.
We made Christian Ponder look halfway decent. That's the
Him, Jake Locker, Tavares Jackson. Like, it's funny. We said Falcons defense is relatively solid here, but there were still some major blips.
No, look, you know, they were still the same old Falcons that would let a team get back into a game. And I remember Jake Locker coming in, you know, when Hasselbeck got hurt, and I think the Falcons were up like three scores in the third quarter, and Jake Locker, you know, takes him down the field on, like, you know, consecutive scoring drives. It's like, it's a one score game with only a few minutes left. What's happening here? But yeah, it is what it is.
I know it's one of the more traditional, or if you want to phrase it, notorious things about the Falcons defense. You know how there's certain things where it's like, oh, of course, that's what they do, the Falcons defense. This was the year I thought they were just terrible at defending screens. Like, week one, Hester broke one off. Jeremy Maclin the following week broke off. Like, just looking at some of the just not being able to get off blocks or open tackles, open field missed tackles, would it be William Moore was not very good that year. I know he got benched at one point, but I saw Moore. Oh, Deku was a disaster at times. Like, and I thought James Sanders could do something, but there was just so much bad tackling, and we didn't even mention Dante Robinson yet. It was just bad, like them not being able to defend screens. I know it's something that is kind of synonymous with the Falcons, but this season in particular, I don't know what happened, but it was kind of like, okay, Mike Mulkey's got to go. You could put Brian Van Gore there as well.
Yeah. And, you know, another positive shout out, just again, I don't get the opportunity to talk about him as much. I've talked about him a lot, but, you know, Ovie Mahaley, like, this was the year, Alan, you mentioned Mike Cox and whatever, and it's like, you know, I don't want to be the hot takey guy and be like, oh, you know, Michael Turner was nothing without Ovie, because Michael Turner was very good. But as we discussed in previous episodes, like, Harvey Dahl and Ovie Mahaley were instrumental to, you know, Turner's success, and it was very clear after Ovie got hurt, I think in the Lions game, and then sort of the running game just sort of evaporating until that week 17 game, as I mentioned earlier. So it's just one of those things where it's like, you know, still got to give some love for Ovie, because even when the Falcons unfortunately turned the page on him after this season, you know, I was heartbroken, and it was only through my love of Patrick DeMarco that grew over the next 4+ years that would restore that emptiness into my heart. And then, of course, the Falcons broke my heart again. So it is what it is, guys.
They replaced him with Lusaka Polite. And for old school listeners, you get that reference. That's all I'm going to say about that. Lusaka Polite.
Anything. There's like six people listening that get that reference. But okay. Anything else, Alan, before we get into my random shout outs?
I just want to mention there was one Michael Turner run where he took Eric Reams and threw him at Jaguars defender. That was a great moment. And, oh, I was watching the Titan highlights when he just obliterated Michael Griffin. Oh, that was just straight up bully mode. That was, I just love watching old school Michael Turner, because yeah, there's some of those power runs, he just leaves defenders down on the turf. Like, there's just, that's it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not, like, I'm gonna be a little bummed watching 2012 because, oh, boy, 2012 Michael Turner really hurts my heart. Like, it's really sad watching 2012 Michael Turner. But that said, like, oh, just watching him run at defenders and just watching them just backtrack because you know they're just gonna go flying. Oh, what a sight. And that Michael Griffin, boy. But I know, Aaron, this is the time where you like to give your Rams shout out, so the floor is yours.
Yeah, so, you know, this time I got a few more names on the list, and I actually went and looked at some of the guys that were maybe some training camp superstars or some guys that got cut after training camp that maybe should have been mentioned in some previous seasons because maybe that's when they first arrived here and maybe made their first name, but didn't get the opportunity to do so. So Will Svitek, shout out to him for outplaying Sam Baker and making that contract look even worse when you got a replacement level veteran outperforming Sam Baker and Dimitroff doubling down on that. But shout out to Reggie Kelly for his return to Atlanta and being terrible in 2011. Mike Cox, Brett Romberg, his only claim to fame was being on D Block one time and showing off his wonderful singing voice.
That's a name. That's a name. Brett Romberg. I totally forgot it.
James Sanders for making a couple of plays, making some things happen. Kelvin
Two
Hayden.
Points, folks. Two
Kelvin
points.
Hayden. Didn't he get a pick in the Eagles game, I think?
The Eagles game and the Colts game. Curtis Painter gave him a nice freebie.
Carlton Powell, defensive tackle out of Virginia Tech. That he was.
Yikes. I remember that. Him and Pierre Jerry were lying together at one point. I was like, yeah, we don't need to watch this.
Darren Walls, you guys remember that guy, the undrafted corner out of Notre Dame?
Notre Dame.
Kirk Chambers, who I think we scooped up late in the season as an injury replacement of offensive tackle. Robert James. Who can forget Robert James and his ability to basically survive five seasons on the Falcons roster without playing a single down?
And multiple suspensions.
Yeah. Joe Zelinka, the long
Jalen
snapper.
Jalen Collins wishes he could have done.
Joe Zelinka, the long snapper before
Josh Harris.
Yeah, I was trying to think if there was someone between him and Josh Harris, but Joe Zelinka, Jose Valdez. Anybody remember Jose Valdez? He was Ryan Schrader before Ryan Schrader.
I thought he was a poster on the Falcons forum.
John Parker Wilson.
Oh, Dreamboat. You're forgetting one. I hope I saw him in a clip. I'm not going to say it. Are you done? Just one.
I got two more. Raphael All Bush right. And Adam Frohman.
Oh, you're forgetting one. I think I saw him against the Lions because Julio was injured that game. Kerry Meyer.
Was this? Oh, yeah. He knocked out the long snapper for the Vikings.
Yeah.
He broke his
and
jaw.
Jared Allen had it coming.
Yeah.
Jared Allen putting Corey Bierman's special teams credibility to shame. Quick wrap up. Best moment. I'm going with the Lions game, specifically when Ryan hit Roddy near the back of the end zone. Just beautiful play.
Jacksonville game, that was the only fun game to watch.
Okay, and then worst moment.
Giants.
We spent 20 minutes on it.
Giants.
The ticket is nowhere to be seen, and there you go.
It could have been the Saints game if not for the Giants game, you know, when Peyton was running up to score to get Drew Brees the record, but the Giants far outweighs it.
2011. Not a good one, folks.
All right, so we will be coming back with Brad Rowland and Matt Chernoff in the Falcons Historian Shootout coming right up, guys. And before we get there, I want to let you guys know about the 50% off sale at BuiltBar.com. Everything must go because Built Bar is selling off their entire inventory of 8 million protein bars with 100% of the profits going to organizations that support education, equality, and the end to poverty and racism. There's no better time to buy Built Bars, whether it's your first box or whether you're on your seventh box like myself. Those that have tried Built Bars can back me up when I say that they are not your average protein bar. They have less calories, less sugar, less carbs, more protein, more fiber, without sacrificing taste, because all Built Bars have 100% real chocolate in them, come in a variety of flavors. There's over 15 flavors. I prefer peanut butter, coconut almond, German chocolate cake, mint brownie delight, double chocolate mousse, so much more. Go to Built Bar right now. Take advantage of this offer of 50% off, over 15 flavors, all half off at BuiltBar.com. So, guys, we are here for another Falcons Historian Shootout where we'll be asking two contestants about a recent Falcons season, today being the 2011 season. Our contestants, of course, are Matt Chernoff. You hear him every day on Chuck and Chernoff on 680 The Fan. He is going up against Brad Rowland, the host of the Locked on Hawks podcast. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thanks for having me. Looking forward to it. It's not fair, I know. Brad's probably got this stuff unlocked from the last decade, so I know my chances are slim.
I was going to say the same thing, so I think we'll self-deprecate into existence tonight.
Set up the humble win, you know, right now.
Yeah.
All right. So as we do before we jump into the trivia section of today's episode, we want to get your guys' memories of the 2011 season. At what point in your life, in your career, were you at, you know, when this season happened? Matt, you know, you can start us off.
I was still at 680. I'll tell you what jumped off the page. That season was just frustration. It felt like they could never truly like find some solid ground. Every time you would figure they'd win a couple in a row, they would lose a couple in a row. I just remember a couple of really frustrating losses. That might have been the year they all run together, but that might have been the year of the famous Mike Smith fourth down on his own side of the field against the Saints, if memory serves.
It was.
And of course the wonderful 24-2 playoff defeat that will go down. Like, sadly, that'll go down as not the worst Falcon playoff loss, but it's in the top three.
Yeah. Brad, what about you?
Yeah, we were talking before we started recording. I mean, the first thing when you guys said this is the year, I just pictured 24-2 in my brain because 2 is such an embarrassing way to lose. It's like almost better to get shut out than to score 2 points because you can just remember that 2 was a number that happened and that was really bad. It wasn't, you know, this is not obviously not one of the worst years in my Falcons fandom history, but I certainly would echo Matt. Like, not a year that is that was as good as it felt like it could have been at times.
Okay. Alan, who do you want to start things off with?
Oh, we start with Brad.
Okay.
So Aaron will ask 5 questions of Brad, and then I will ask Matt 5 questions.
All right. Here we go.
Throw it to the fire. All right. Brad, first question. This player led the Falcons in tackles with 147 in 2011.
I believe that's Curtis Lofton.
That is correct. Number 2. This Falcons rookie led the team with 19 special teams tackles.
Oof. Well, I have no idea. This is going to be a guess. Who were the rookies? Is it Akeem Dent?
That is correct. Yes.
Wow.
I was just picturing who the rookies were. I had no idea that he led the team in special teams tackles. That was a total guess. I was just trying to think of someone who was a rookie that might have played special teams.
There you go. All right. Question 3. In 2011, the Falcons had 4 players with 10 or more quarterback hits, something that the Falcons have only ever achieved one other time since quarterback hits were stats available in 2006. Name 3 of those 4 players that hit that benchmark.
John Abraham.
That's 1.
Croy Bierman.
That's 2.
This is where it gets hard. Those 2 I felt good about. Jonathan Babineau.
That is incorrect.
Ah!
The other 2 answers possible were Lawrence Sidberry and Ray Edwards.
Oh, Ray Edwards.
Hey, wow. Grandma, Ray Edwards. Come on, man.
Ray Edwards.
Lawrence Sidberry.
Oh, my gosh. I had no chance at Sidberry. I should have known Ray Edwards. Yeah.
And just, you know, FYI, the only other season since 2006 where the Falcons did this was 2017.
Oh, all right.
Question 4. This Falcons player recorded a safety that resulted in the Falcons' only points in their playoff loss to the Giants.
Oh, how do I not know this? I don't, though.
Everybody remembers that we scored 2, but no one remembers who the guys were responsible for.
I think I've blocked it out. I'll just say Jonathan Babineau, since I was wrong about the last one.
It's a corner, wasn't it? It was like a corner or a safety. It was like
I can almost see it. I can't remember.
It was a safety.
Like Lauren Malloy or somebody?
James Sanders.
James Sanders.
Oh, I know. Oh, I had no chance of that.
Sanders. Yeah.
No chance.
Jeez. That's a deep cut, right?
Yeah, I had no chance there.
Hysterical.
All right. Question 5. The Falcons had 2 Pro Bowlers in 2011. Name them both.
Roddy.
That's 1.
Oh, God. 2011. Tony Gonzalez.
That is the other one.
Yeah. Good job. All right.
All right,
that wasn't too embarrassing.
Yeah,
I'm shocked Turner didn't get in.
I almost said Turner. That was my other guess. I was trying to decide my brain between Turner and Tony, and I just remember Tony getting there like every year for a while.
True. Yeah.
So I felt like I was safer, but who knows?
Okay. All right, Matt. Here we go. First question: The Falcons scored 40 points Falcons scored 40 points in two games in 2011. Who were the two opponents?
Let's say how about Tampa, Jacksonville.
Got both. Well done. Week 15, okay. Week 17.
There we go.
I remember the Jacksonville was like a Thursday night awful thing. The Tampa thing was a complete guess.
John Abraham. I don't know who the tackles were. John Abraham just wrecked everyone's side in that game. Yeah, that was a good time. Second one. Who did Julio Jones' first career touchdown come against?
I don't know. I'd say the Colts.
That's correct. Score two.
That's great.
Question three. Name two players that the Falcons drafted in 2011 after they traded for Julio Jones.
Two players they drafted in 11.
Yeah. They drafted five altogether. All I need is two.
I'm going to go with Brad's choice, the great Coy Bierman. The great Akeem Dent.
You got Akeem Dent, but no, Corey Bierman was 2008. It was Jaquizz Rodgers. Yeah, it was Jaquizz Rodgers, Matt Bosher, Andrew Jackson, Cliff Matthews.
Oh, Matt Bosher.
Drafted a president?
Yeah.
But yeah, that was the Matt Bosher year.
Jaquizz was 08.
Yeah. Question four. Matt Ryan had 2 4 touchdown games in 2011. Name one of the opponents.
Well, let's go with one I just said. How about Jacksonville?
Is your final answer?
Well, you're shaking your head. I don't feel. Can I call a friend?
50-50 or something?
I mean, yeah. 50-50, I already said it. So, all right, I guess I'll stick with it. I don't feel good about it now.
It's correct. It was the Eagles and the Panthers. All right, so question five. This is make or break. If you get it, you go through. If not, we got the tiebreaker ready to go.
No, wait. Didn't Brad get three of them right?
Oh, is that right?
Did I get three?
Yeah, you did get three.
The last one. Yeah.
Okay, so we either go to extra time or this is it. So
pressure.
Question more five. Pressure. Who led the team in tackles for a loss?
Did they get those in 2011? Probably obvious and wrong, but I'll say John Abraham.
Incorrect. It was Sean Weatherspoon, as I did the spoon right now.
Ooh, spoon.
That was his best year, man.
Sad. If I'm going to lose, I can lose to Brad and feel okay about it.
Yeah, this is a true Atlanta sports matchup. I was very excited about this. We got the Hawks there. We got Atlanta sports guys. So
we are both very Atlanta.
I didn't represent myself very well. That was less than encouraging. Do I go to the loser's bracket? What happened?
You go out with pride. You made it to the quarterfinals. you did your thing.
You don't have to answer the phone again, Matt. You cannot do it.
There's always an upside.
Guys, we appreciate you joining us on today's episode, and this is the opportunity for you guys to plug what you do, what you guys got coming up. Brad, since you are the victor, we will give you the floor to plug your stuff right now.
I'm far less famous than Matt. I host Locked On Hawks. I run Peachtree Hoops. I host the Talking Chop podcast, and once in a blue moon, I go talk about the Hawks on 680 with Matt.
Well, the show gets smarter when we have Brad on. That's why we like him on. Yeah, we do a dumb radio show 3 to 7 every afternoon, and just try to stay employed as long as possible. The bar is set low.
All right, Matt. Appreciate it, man. And enjoy your vacation, man.
Thanks, guys. Alan, I appreciate it. Aaron, thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Right. Thank you, fellas.
See you, fellas.
Have a good night, guys.
Appreciate y'all.
All right, man. All right, guys. Another Falcons historian shootout in the books. We have wrapped up round two of this thing. Alan, great matchup there from Matt and Brad, but break down what we have coming in the semifinals coming up with the final four, so to speak.
So we have for the 2012 season, because now we are moving into the conference championship season. So it will be me against Adnan Ikic for 2012 season, which I kind of remember pretty well. But, of course, I'm going to have to revisit because I know you're going to ask me the toughest question possible. So I'm looking forward to that. And now we have our second semifinal matchup. It will be Brad Roland, who is, I would say, kind of pulling off a couple upsets. And we could also say Kevin Knight as well, who he will be facing. They have the 2004 season, which that's the one I'm really excited because I don't really remember much. Because I was 11 years old at the time. So going back to the glorious Vic year, I'm very much excited for. So that'll be happening in a few weeks due to some scheduling and holidays. We're going to hold off for a couple of weeks, but we'll be back with a bang come mid-July.
Absolutely. As you guys are listening to this, I'm probably on vacation. So just taking a couple of days off, as I've been talking about the last couple of weeks, at a beach somewhere. But our next episode won't be a Falcons historian shootout, as Alan just intimated. It will be a mailbag for Monday. So go ahead, send in any of your questions that you may have. I might even get Alan to join me on that if I can get him, I don't know. Alan likes his weekends off. We'll figure it out. But at some point,
we'll always have to take shots.
I don't know. I realized I was going down a bad path. I was like, why am I doing this? We'll do a mailbag. And of course, if you want to provide your questions, your commentary, you know, whether it's mailbag related or whatever, you can send those in to Locked On Falcons on Twitter. You can send them in on Facebook at Locked On Falcons as well there, as well as if you have a long one and you want to send a big old email, or you just don't want anybody to read what you're saying out there on social media, you can send it in via email to lockedonfalcons@mail.com. We'll answer as many of those questions on Monday's episode, and then we'll be back with other Falcons related content later next week to get you guys geared up for the holiday, 4th of July, if you're here in the States, which 95% of the listenership is. And for the 5% out of you, it's just a random weekend in July. So you guys will enjoy that. And we'll be back with more Falcons historian shootout later in the month of July, as well as, more starting to get geared up for what hopefully will be the 2020 NFL season with some divisional crossovers as well. So those are things that you guys can look forward to on Locked On Falcons. Of course, make sure that you subscribe to the Locked On Falcons podcast on your favorite podcast platform, whether that's Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And while you're subscribing to Locked On Falcons, why don't you just go, scroll one spot down on the queue in the alphabetical list of Locked On Fantasy Football right after Locked On Falcons, subscribe to Vinny Iyer's podcast so that you guys can get geared up for this upcoming fantasy football season. Again, Locked On Fantasy Football, hosted by Vinny Iyer on your favorite podcast platform, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Spotify.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.